on Petawash Day. You are listening to KDKO 89.5 on your FM dial, coming to you from Lake Andy, South Dakota, and Ihunktamon country. I am Donna Hawkes, your host for Ohomani Iotaka. Gather around in a circle and sit down. It's time for storytelling. And we are reading Water Lily, written by Ella DeLoria, a Dakota herself. So last week, where we left off in our reading, Little Chief was given the high honor of counting first coup on a Crow warrior that was killed by his father, Rainbow. And that is just, that's an honor, the highest honor for a young Lakota boy. And Rainbow wanted to bestow this upon his son. And then after Little Chief counted coup on the Crow scout, he was a Crow scout, two of his cousins also counted coup. So they counted second and third coup. So it was quite an event. And the scout was killed perchance as they were sitting around their campfire that evening, and they were eating some deer meat that they had gotten in a little hunt that day. And so they're sitting around enjoying the evening and having their meal and, you know, cozy by the campfire. And they could hear this whippoorwill sound. And Rainbow really listened to it. The others kept, you know, going in about their visiting and they're eating their meal. And he listened, and sure enough, there it was again. And he knew that it was something more. It wasn't a whippoorwill, it was something more. And so when he got done eating, he was chewing on that deer meat. And when he was done eating that, he took that bone and he threw it right in that direction of that whippoorwill. And then he got up the next morning, because the sound stopped. So he knew that they were okay. So he got up the next morning and he went out to that area where he heard that sound coming from. And sure enough, there was a Crow scout laying there. And he had just, by chance, killed him with that bone that he threw. And it hit that Crow scout's temple. So now we're going to begin this week's reading of Water Lily. And I am your host, Donna Hawkes. And I hope you enjoy the book. So here we go. All of this was highly exciting to Water Lily. At the next dance, she knew the incident would be marked in many ways. Little Chief's aunts and his mother, Bluebird, would outdo themselves at the giveaway in his name. It would be all very wonderful. It was also personally important to Water Lily in a unique way. Gloku had already explained that she, as the sister of a warrior, was the proper person to carry the scalp in the victory procession. That, she said, was always the prerogative of a hero's sister. For days on end, Water Lily enjoyed a delicious torment in anticipation of her coming role. She would be so proud to carry the decorated pole with the trophy mounted away up there in the top. But could she endure the gaze of so many spectators? She remembered a legend about a sensitive youth who was knocked down physically by the mere concentration of all eyes on him. Might that happen to her? Oh, it would be too dreadful. For Water Lily was fast becoming bashful, as a well-trained young girl was expected to be. At the age of 10 winters, she was already reticent and demure from watching the conventional behavior of her cousin, Leaping Fawn, and the other girls older than herself, taking her cue from them. Not independently had she done this, but because she had also been admonished in direction. The loud, bold girl is not approved, Gloku would say. Water Lily saw that this meant Alila specifically. Alila, for all her warmth and friendliness, was loud and bold. Instinctively, Water Lily knew enough not to copy her. At last she confided in Gloku. "Grandmother, I think I am too young to be in the procession with grown-ups." Gloku could see that, much as the girl was elated over the idea, she would be more comfortable not to claim her right at this time. "Well, perhaps you are," she soothed her. "But don't worry, there will be other opportunities, for your brother will be a real warrior someday. His feet are set in that direction." In the end, it was Bluebird who carried the trophy in her daughter's place. To have the right was enough for Water Lily. She could take quiet pride in that. Rainbow had gone after deer, not enemies, as everyone knew. Even so, his accidental deed merited the same recognition as a deed intentionally achieved. A war deed was a war deed, no matter what. That early sampling of military glory did things to Little Chief. He found it hard to wait until he could legitimately join a war party. "Perhaps in 4 or 5 years," his grandfather had said. It seemed an intolerable time to wait, while doing commonplace things again. So he took matters into his own hands, and he got his taste of battle much earlier. Of all things, he joined a war party that was setting out in anger, determined on reprisal. Early that following fall, the enemy struck with unbelievable boldness during a peaceful night. Stealing right into the camp circle, they wantonly scalped 3 children and spirited away a young girl as she lay asleep. In addition, they took the best horses, though the owners had them picketed near their teepees. The camp circle was in an uproar at dawn when the losses were discovered. There was universal wailing for the dead children and the disappearance of the young girl, and their parents and relatives mutilated themselves recklessly in their grief. Meantime, the warriors were assembling in anger to start forth after the offenders. That master warrior, Bearheart, had already rallied them. "Men," he said to his followers, "this is an insult that must be avenged with our lives if need be. Are you with me?" Then, and while he sat on the grass and smoked in ominous calm, it was Little Chief who broke in on his silence. "Uncle, I am going with you." The boy's eyes were blazing with eagerness, but Bearheart did not laugh him off. One must not ridicule young ambition for fear of killing it. He puffed away for some time and then said, "I have to say no, for a good reason. This is no trip for you, my nephew. This is an angry errand, a determined one. Unless we are victorious, we mean to die on the battlefield. There may be no one to bring you back safely." The boy said nothing, but his silence was more insistent than pleading. The uncle had more to say. "If this were to be the usual kind of war path, a mere seeking after adventure for the sport and glory of it, then I would say yes. But let me make you a promise. When next I go out on such a warpath, you shall go with me." "Thank you, uncle." The boy slipped away. The war party started at noon and traveled all night. The next evening, it being still within Dakota territory, the men stopped to rest for a while and sent 2 young men to fetch water and fuel for cooking a meal. When the 2 returned, they brought Little Chief in. How he had followed and managed to evade their constant lookout was a puzzle. One of the young men had stumbled upon him lying in the brush where he had gone to pick up some wood. They stood him before Braveheart, who smoked on as though not seeing him. At last, he looked earnestly at the boy. Ah, my nephew, this was what I did not want, for I needed freedom from personal care. I meant for nothing to impede me seeking revenge. But now I must worry over your safety at the same time. However, you are here now, and you shall go on. We can spare no one to take you back. As it turned out, Little Chief proved himself very useful to the expedition, though he was not permitted to see the actual fighting. They left him behind in a hidden spot some distance from the enemy's camp to take care of the relief horses and the food and extra supplies of the war party. The return trip was a complete triumph, for there had been reprisal killings of the enemy in hand-to-hand fights. All the stolen horses were recovered, and many of the enemy's finest were taken in addition. Best of all, the young girl was rescued, unharmed, from the lodge of the chief, where she had been taken in adoption in place of a daughter recently dead. The party rode hard day and night until they were once more in familiar country. There they stopped, being fairly certain of not being followed, and feasted on parts of fresh buffalo meat from a stray animal killed along the way. For Little Chief, it was a thrill to hear them recount around the campfire the details of their individual struggles with the enemy. There were many further things he wanted to know, but he hesitated to draw attention to himself, knowing too well that he was there on sufferance only, still an unnecessary burden. It had all proved to be more wonderful and terrifying than he and his companions back home ever imagined from hearing war tales. For while the battle raged and the cries and shouts of struggle reached him in his retreat, he had been badly scared, and the enormity of his step in tagging after this war party had come to him with frightening impact for the first time. It had been so presumptuous of him. However, he felt better when a seasoned warrior, during the talk by the campfire, laid a hand on his shoulder and said, "What would we have done without this fine lad? We owe him much, my friends, for it was he who enabled us to leap from our spent horses to fresh ones, all without slackening speed." That was somewhat exaggerated, of course, but Little Chief did have everything packed and ready to go, so that when the warriors came, they could start homeward immediately. He felt better. In fact, he began to fancy himself quite a warrior, little knowing what still lay ahead of him. The initiation tests regularly given to a boy who stole out on the warpath as he had done. First, they sent him for water at night and expected him to find his way through the dark and dangerous woods to the stream. And when he brought it to them, they rejected it and sent him back for more. "This is not the water I wanted," they said after tasting it, and spat it out contemptuously. 3 times they did this, and only accepted the water he brought the 4th time, though he got it all from the same spot. The last water they passed around, sampling it in turn and exclaiming, "Ah, this is it. Boy, why did you not bring it before?" Next, when they stopped at noon, they sent him on a scouting mission. "Boy, now go about the surrounding hills. See what you can see that we should know." So he ran over the low-lying hills and the ravines and returned with a report that there were deer tracks near a waterhole and that there were evidences of a recent camp beyond one of the hills. The two young men sent to verify these statements returned to say they were both correct, that there had been a campfire very recently put out with the embers still warm. And for proof of the deer tracks, one of the riders brought back the deer slung over the back of his horse. Little Chief felt his prestige soaring as he heard the men's praises. We're going to take a little station break here. And of course, you are listening to KDKO 89.5 on your FM dial. And if you're just joining us, you know, we come from Lake Andes, South Dakota. And we are reading Water Lily by Ella DeLoria. I'm going to take a sip of water and we're going to finish this week's reading. Okay. But it was not until the warriors had conferred certain awards on him, just before they reached home, that he was completely happy, feeling that he belonged. The awards were the proofs of his success. One was the stick with the little bag attached in which he had brought the water. The other was a cluster of feathers, which the warriors called the Flutterers. The man who awarded him the water carrier said, "Take this wand as proof of your courage. It shall be your first war standard. To it you will attach trophies you win in the future. Observe that it is made of ash. Ash is strong. Though it may bend, it will not readily break. So be like the ash, resilient. The water cup is made from the sheath of a buffalo's heart. It says, be hospitable. You will notice the wolf tail dangling from the wand. It is the warrior's symbol. A warrior should be friends with the wolf, for he is the chief warrior. He knows the hills and the valleys of the land. He knows where to hide and how to fight. For him, you can learn many things. Observe the crow feathers on the wand. The crow is a bird that flies straight and far and does not lose its way. So should a warrior go unerringly. Take the wand. You have earned your water carrier." It was his own Uncle Bear Heart who next awarded him the Flutterers. They were four long feathers trimmed to their naked quills and tightly bound together at the base with a cord of sinew. The tiny fans left at the tips were the finest barbs that caught the air and remained in continuous motion. Little Chief had never heard of Flutterers before, much less seen one. Boys who sneaked after a war party were rare, and those who passed the test were rarer still. Handing the award to him, Bearheart said, "Take this, my boy. It is the symbol of scouting. Keep it always, and from it learn to be superhumanly aware. Note that the tips are a tremble even on the stillest days when men of duller senses feel no movement of air. So should a true scout be, ever more alert and aware than others." With such tangible proofs of a successful warpath, Little Chief was no longer afraid to get home. He had felt right along that his people must be worrying about his absence, but now he was sure that they would forgive all. He hoped his father would approve and would say, "It is admirable to sample warfare. It is well to be off to a good start so young. It is a privilege to go under the able tutelage of the great Bearheart. Rainbow did not say precisely those words, but he was glad that it all turned out as it did. At the victory dance to celebrate the success of the reprisal journey, Little Chief actually walked with warriors, while his relatives, especially his aunts, gave many gifts in his name and cheered him again and again. When Water Lily was in her 12th winter, the third important honor came to her brother. He killed his first buffalo. That morning, a blizzard was raging outside, making the teepees very dark, as though it were still night. Nobody wanted much to get up. Since no work was possible outdoors or in, it seemed just as well to sleep the day away. But then suddenly, there were excited voices outside, men shouting to one another from teepee to teepee, but what they were saying was incoherent against the noise of the storm, and those in the teepees caught only snatches at first. Gradually, however, it came to light that a herd of buffalo, blinded by the storm, had walked right into camp and were discovered at dawn roaming aimlessly among the scattered winter teepees, just like domesticated animals. And what a welcome accident that was. Men hastily organized to drive them onto open ground away from the teepees and to hold them there if possible until the others could get ready for the chase. "Make haste! Make haste!" the village crier went about shouting. "Of their own accord, our brothers, seeing we were in need, have again come to feed us. Bring your sharp knives for the butchering." Listening to the commotion, Water Lily was glad she was a girl and could remain cozy in bed. The poor man who must go out to chase in winter like this. And then she heard her father, Rainbow, outside the grandparents' teepee where she slept. In urgent words, he began calling Little Chief, who also slept in the teepee, to get up and come outside. "Wake up, my son, wake up. Only women may be excused for lying curled up at a time like this. A male must expect to bang his skull to earth a time or two. Remember your sister and cousins. Doubtless they would be cheered by a bowl of hot buffalo soup. So come, today calls for men." Water Lily could hear her brother scrambling to sitting position and hurriedly putting on his clothes, saying nothing back to his father, only breathing very hard and audibly through his teeth, for it was cold. He was not balking. He knew his father was right. This kind of thing was his destiny. Water Lily lay very still, with face to the wall as teepee etiquette dictated, and with eyes tightly shut for good measure. It was not only bad manners, but also a lack of kinship obligation to look out at anyone getting up or dressing, especially a brother. Gloku also got up and sat leaning forward from her sitting space to blow on her fire again and again, coaxing the damp wood to catch. Her eyes wrinkled shut against the smoke from the sluggish fire. Between blowings, she hurled out compliments on behalf of Little Chief. "But he is only a lad. He is too young to take part in a winter chase." Rainbow ignored his mother's interference, if indeed he heard. Instead, he called again, "Hurry! The herd will get out of hand while we crawl about. Let's be on our way." He could be heard readying his buffalo ponies as he talked. "Son," Gloku called louder, "at least let the boy stop long enough to drink some soup. I will have it warmed up at once." But Rainbow called back impatiently, "Mother, Don't pamper the boy. He is old enough and he is a male, remember that. Send him out at once. Little Chief rushed out of the teepee, trailing his robe after him. That was the last seen of him until he returned late in the day, bedraggled and chilled to the bone, but with his first buffalo. Glow-Koo at once cooked the tongue, considered the choicest part, and served it as in a rite to the boy's respect relatives, Water Lily, Leaping Fawn, and Prairie Flower, for whom the boy had, as it were, risked his life. His father was quietly pleased, but his blind grandfather was boisterously proud as he began naming off a list of his cronies, whom he wished as guests to eat the boy's first kill. Nor were they slow in coming. Singly or in genial groups, they began to arrive, each one carrying his eagle wing fan, which was standard equipment for old men, both summer and winter, and his long-stemmed pipe, and his pouch containing a blend of tobacco and kinnikinick. For whatever old men foregathered, each must play the host in turn by filling his pipe and sending it around. It was the custom from old that the old man on his left lit it and puffed on it leisurely two or three times before handing it to the one on his left. The pipe always traveled clockwise around a circle of friends, the host smoking it last. The aged guests seated themselves with some delay, deferring to one another with a, "You sit there, friend." "No, you," with courteous dignity as became friends, while they drank a great deal of the rich, meaty soup, enjoying it noisily, and chewed laboriously such meat as they had teeth for. They praised the boy's achievement highly. It was gratifying to Little Chief to watch them enjoying food he had made possible. When the old men had eaten their fill and started the pipe around, they fell to recounting their own first hunting experiences, while Little Chief listened with eyes shining. He knew what they were talking about. After a little, one of his guests turned to him, "And now, grandchild, let us hear how you got your first buffalo." We are going to end here this week, and next week we will listen to Little Chief recounting his first buffalo kill. Very, very exciting for a young Lakota boy. I want to remind everybody you are listening to Ohomni Iotaka. I am your host, Donna Hawkes, and this program is made possible with funding from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. You are listening to KDKO 89.5 on your FM dial, coming to you from Lake Andes, South Dakota, and Ihanktawang Country. This program is made possible with funding from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting.